Welcome back to the show, my darling friends. I hope you are doing well today. This week is a hard week for me, and this episode that you're about to listen to is a very, very vulnerable, tender, soft, raw, open-hearted one. We just said goodbye to one of our family dogs this week, and it's been a very precious, painful time. I share the journey of dogs today. I share the journey of love and letting go and gratitude and joy and grief and just that magical bond that only a dog really can bring. And I'm so grateful I get to share the story and I get to speak these words. They were very healing to share, and I hope you find some healing here too. Want to know one of my favorite sounds? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language, I guarantee it'll be one of your new favorite sounds too. Be a better you with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you have learned in the real world. I absolutely love using Babbel. Their convenient courses have helped both me and my husband learn real-life conversation skills in a different language. He's learning Swedish, of course, and I've been trying my hand at French again. It is so easy to learn how to order food, how to ask for directions, speak to merchants, and all without having to consult language apps while on vacation, or in my husband's case, living here in Sweden with me. Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better. One study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college. Babbel has over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off of your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, at babbel.com/yoga. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/yoga, spelled babbel.com/yoga. Rules and restrictions may apply. Hi, everybody. Hi. Welcome back to the show. Welcome back to the Yoga Girl podcast. I have been pacing myself. I have been trying to prepare myself. I've been trying to process as much as possible before sitting down to record this week's podcast, because I am in a place right now that feels almost too tender, almost too raw and vulnerable. And I very rarely feel that way with the pod, you know? And the strange thing about this podcast and how intimate it is and how my storytelling and my sharing here is, it's so intimate. It's really crazy intimate. I really sit down every week and I just open my heart and I pour my heart out and I share whatever is true and real. And every time I sit down to record, I feel like I'm sitting down to talk to a friend. So there is no way for me to be going through something and to fake it. You know, I feel like if this podcast was less intimate or less real, I could make something up for this week. I could choose a topic and I could go, hey, today we're going to talk about foraging, you know, and then I would just have an episode about foraging, which we should have, by the way. Sounds like fun. Or, you know, do something else, or I would have pre-recorded episodes ready for a hard week. And you know, I don't have any of that. And I know I wouldn't be able to not sit down and and tell the truth, you know. But, you know, the pod must go on. Like, it's really an every week kind of thing. And whenever I say that, you know, it's never hard to record this podcast. It's never a have to, you know. It's never something I have to make myself do. And it's hard. It never feels like work. And whenever I share, kind of like, you know, this pod, it rolls every week. And if something comes up, I've had some of you write me, you know, you can just take a break. You know, you can just, it's okay if there's no pod 1 week, like if I've been sick or something's happened, you know. And I feel like that's such a loving thing to say. And it's exactly what a friend would say, another friend, if they're going through something hard. It's like, just take a break this week. But here I am. And yeah, just a trigger warning that on today's episode of the podcast, I'm going to talk about death. And I'm going to cry. I'm already crying. And I feel, I was telling Dennis this morning, I need to do something really fun and uplifting and just like clear my head before I sit down to record the podcast. So I don't start the podcast off crying. You know, I don't want it to be like a sniffly, you know, snotty, just crying all the way through kind of pod. But it already is. Even though I went to yoga this morning, I actually went to a class, which I never really do. And I took a walk and I sat out in the sun and I laughed with a friend on the phone. And yeah, I'm feeling overall really steady. And then as soon as I sit down, it's like, hey, hi, I'm talking to you. And talking to you means speaking from the heart, right? Which also happens to be the name of this pod. And immediately my heart just breaks a little bit. So yesterday, well, maybe I start from the beginning. I was trying to remember how many weeks ago I shared on the pod that my brother's dog was ill and that he was passing away. It was a lot of weeks ago. It might have been even 2 months ago. I think 6, 7 weeks, maybe even 8, almost 2 months. And we were traveling. We were on the West Coast, Leah and Dennis and I, together with my dad's side of the family, when my brother found out that his dog's name's Hammer. And he's more of a person than a dog. And I know a lot of dog people say that about their dogs, like, he's so human. But like, Hammer really was something else, you know. And Ludwig, my brother, he found out that he had a tumor in his sinuses, kind of pressing on the front of his brain, and that it was a big one. And it was almost 2 months ago, you know. And it was very urgent, and it was very, you know, it happened so quickly, and his health just deteriorated so quickly. So there was a moment there where I really thought, I'm going to leave. It was only a 5-day trip we were on the West Coast. And I thought, I'm gonna have to cut this trip short and go home, because he's going to have to let Hammer go and put him down, you know, before it gets unbearable. You know, it happened so quickly. And he went from being totally fine to not being able to breathe through his nose. And for a dog, that's really, yeah, you know, have you ever met a dog? Have you ever met a dog? Do you know any dogs? Are you a dog person? You know, dogs breathe through their nose majority of the time, unless they are panting or, you know, out walking or running. You know, they regulate through breathing through their mouths, but they breathe through their noses. Their mouths are almost always closed. And especially for sleep, right? They just, all of their breathing happens through the nose. So not being able to breathe and having a tumor there pressing on your sinuses, it's just too much, right? So I almost went home because he asked. He said, it might happen very soon, and can you be here with me? And I said, of course, you know. But then the next day he was kind of a little bit better, you know. And then something happened. I mean, it really was a shift. I don't know. It went from this really urgent, panicky, crazy, feeling scary kind of thing to all of a sudden he got a little bit better. and we got some time. And it has been the most beautiful time. I mean, really, really. I was sharing just a little bit about this feeling that I get sometimes when I'd speak publicly about the loss of an animal, the loss of a dog. I know for all you cat people who are listening, I know there's a lot of you out there, you know, the loss of a cat, the loss of a dog. It is so hard for someone who doesn't have a dog to understand what that's like. And it's, you know, I hear people kind of shrug their shoulders and, you know, it's just a dog. It's not like it's a person or someone's child or, you know, it's not like it was a human. It's just a dog. And that's the thing, you know, for anyone who has a dog that is home, anyone who has a dog or a pet that is really family, you know, that really has that deep, deep bond. There's no such thing as just a dog, you know. And we lost a dog. And I talked about that and I talked about him in that last episode I recorded when I thought it was kind of happening then. And of course, losing Hammer or Hammer getting sick triggered a lot of those memories for me around Pepper, mine and Dennis's dog, our first dog together. He was our first baby, really. And I wrote about in my book, To Love and Let Go, I feel like the book is so much about him. You know, he's even on the cover. It's a picture of him and I on the cover of that book. And I share so much of that grief and that process there because it was so big. That whole book is about grief and about death. And you know, the same year, my best friend died, and then my grandma died, and then Pepper died, and then it was just so much within a year. So that whole book is about, it's about grief, really, letting go. Yeah, loving and letting go. And since I wrote that book and then published that book and, you know, read the audio version of that book, this was all 2019, you know, it's been 3 years. I haven't really picked up Pepper in that way. He's been less present with me since it was a whole journey writing the book. It was really the parts that I cried through the most. And I remember recording the audio version, which is reading every word you've written, reading every chapter for the audiobook. And I cried a lot. And for an audiobook, it's not like a podcast. It's not like you can just start sniffling and crying your eyes out and sitting there with a stuffy nose. You know, it's not this. But it has to be proper, you know, it has to be read like a book. Can you imagine though? I feel like I would really love that if I was listening to an audiobook and it's an emotional passage and the author shows that emotion, you know, but that's me. Anyway, that's not how the book world works. Mothers deserve the absolute best. So this Mother's Day, spoil the moms in your life with little luxuries from Osea. Osea's skin and body care is the perfect way to remind all the moms, mother figures, caregivers, grandmothers, and mother-in-laws in your life to make time for themselves. If you have been looking for the perfect gift, I recommend Osea's Andaria Algae Body Oil. I've been using it for years, and it seems like every single time I apply it, I get compliments on my skin. This body oil is rich, but it's never greasy, and it's clinically proven to instantly improve skin elasticity. Your skin will feel more sculpted and toned, and you'll be left feeling silky, soft, and glowing. Another favorite of mine is the Andaria Collagen Body Lotion. Ever since I've been using collagen, I have noticed a difference in my skin. In fact, it's never been better. Using Osea's body oil and lotion together is a mega moisture duo, giving you a full body glow. Osea's products are infused with their signature Andaria seaweed, but it's also clean, vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified. Really just a perfect gift for yourself, the moms in your life, and even the planet. Spoil the moms in your life with clean, vegan skin and body care from Osea. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with the code YOGA at oseamalibu.com. You'll get free samples with every order and free shipping on orders over $60. Head to oseamalibu.com and use the code YOGA for 10% off. So anyway, I had to pause a lot all through that recording because it was one thing writing the book, which took years to do, and then editing the book, which took like a year and a half to do. It was like forever editing. And then I was done, and then I had to pick it back up and read it. And that was so emotional. It was very, very, very healing. I cried so much. And then when I got to the part, the big part of the book is about Pepper and his death. That was the hardest thing to read for me. It was the hardest part of the recording. It was, I had to pause and pause and pause. I had to take a break. I had to start another day. I almost couldn't get through it, really, because the pain of his passing was still so very tender. And this was 2019, right? He passed in 2014. It had been 5 years at that point. And the pain was still so, it was kind of like, you know, if you've gone through grief, real sadness, you know, the passing of someone you love. As time, at least this has been my experience, as time moves forward, it's not like the pain diminishes, you know, but it's kind of like it gets put in a further away part of your heart. So it takes a little more to unpack it, you know, as the years go by. It's always there. It's going to always be there. The loss is always there. The pain is always there. But there's almost like there's like a layer of insulation, of fluff, like a layer of groundedness or something soft covering that pain. But with Pepper, when I was doing the audiobook, it was like that pain was right at the surface of my skin. And as soon as I opened that door, it was like it happened yesterday. You know, it was really like I was reliving the whole thing. And it stayed that tender for a long time. And then when I was done and then the book was published, and I even remember on the book tour, I was doing some speaking engagements and some interviews. And whenever someone would ask about Pepper, I had a really hard time getting through those questions. Like I had a hard time answering those questions and opening that door again and again, because there is something about losing a pet that is just, it's different. It's a different kind of grief. It's a different kind of place you go compared to losing people. And I lost my best friend, you know, and it's not like, you know, Pepper's death was worse. Like I lost my best friend. She was my person, you know, and I miss her so very much. It's just like that grief lives in a different place. That's just how it feels. It's a more adult, somehow, kind of grief. It's also, I've realized, losing a pet, if it's your own and, you know, you feel responsible for them, you are responsible for them. So for me, it came with a lot of guilt, a lot of guilt, a lot of shame, a lot of feelings around, you know, I could have prevented this, I should have prevented this. I should have known better. I should have known. I should have. It was almost like the layer of guilt that came along with his loss was so heavy that it was very hard for me to move through. It was really hard for me to move through. And when my best friend died, you know, in the very beginning, I remember having those feelings. I think when someone dies really traumatically or unexpectedly, or she died in a car crash, I had a lot of those feelings, like if I would have called her that day, you know, she had texted me a few days before and we were going to get on the phone and then we didn't. And I had that thought, if I would have called her that day and we would have had a 2-minute call, you know, just like a little caller, what's up, how you doing, how's life today, that little check-in. If I would have done that and she would have picked up the phone, then maybe she would have left that parking lot that she left, you know, to get on the highway. She would have done that 5 minutes later or 2 minutes later. And that would have been, you know, that could have saved her life. Like that could have been the difference between life and death. That truck that happened to pass at that moment wouldn't have been passing at that. You know, it's like you start thinking all the what if, if only, if only, if only. But somewhere fairly early, those feelings went away because I realized like it's just untrue. You know, I couldn't have prevented her death. I couldn't have. I wish I could have, but I couldn't have, you know. And there's something
So completely uncontrollable in that death. You know, it wasn't up to me. It wasn't my fault. But with Pepper, I really felt like it was up to me. It was my fault. You know, he was my baby. He was my little guy. Like I should have known, you know. So yeah, when I shared that podcast a couple of weeks ago, just talking about my brother's dog and being ill, it was my first time opening the door to the grief around Pepper's death in a really long time, really feeling him present. And of course, if you heard that episode, you know, crying and feeling a lot of feelings. And yeah, and since then, I've felt him really close. You know, I really have. I've felt him really near, really close to me. And Dennis and I are talking about him. We don't talk about him that much. I mean, it's been 8 years now. That's pretty crazy. It's been 8 years since he passed. That's a long time, you know. But Dennis and I have been reminiscing and just, yeah, he's been with us in a way. And these past weeks, getting this time with Hammer, I think has been so, so special and so healing. And there was even a while where all of a sudden he was doing so well that I was like, well, are you sure? Are you sure he has a tumor? Like, are you sure there's nothing we can do? It was like inoperable and no treatment available and in a really tricky place. And my brother just had, he kind of had to keep reminding us that no, you know, his time is coming. It's just not today, you know, but there's going to be a time where he deteriorates and where suffering sets in. And it's like, I don't want him to suffer. So I don't know how much time we have, but we have now, right? And then now became like a week, and it became 2 weeks and 3 weeks and a month. And then we had all this time. And it was because, I think, I don't know, because it was almost like borrowed time. It's a very strange place to be, knowing that someone is going to pass. But right now, you have this now. It makes everything so precious. You know, it makes every day so special. It really brought this huge level of presence into every moment with Hammer. And we've seen more of my brother in the past month and a half than I have, I think, combined in the past 10 years. You know, he's been here for dinner almost every night, going for tons of walks, just going for swims, sitting down by the dock. Hammer loves to swim. He loves the lake, loves the water. So just being down by the water here where we live with him, and Leia cuddling with him. And it's been, I can't really put into words how grateful I am for these past weeks, because it also brought this unbelievable closeness between me and my brother, right? It did. And I think it's softened all of us to this degree where just, you know, nothing else really matters. It's like, it's family, and it's this love we share, and it's having this time with the people and the animals that we love. And how we love these animals. Oh my God. Oh my God, how we love these animals. It's really wild. You know, we have three now. We have Ringo and Keela and Laika. And my brother has Hammer, and that's his one, you know. But everyone in our family has a dog. Even my dad now has a dog. And my dad, who's been super allergic all his life, who's been really not a dog person all his life, even my dad has a dog. Every single one of my siblings has a dog. Everybody has a dog now. Yeah, wait, when I think about it, like really counting, it's crazy, because growing up, I was severely allergic to all furry animals. I was allergic to the point that if, you know, someone in my class in school had an animal at home and they like snuggled that dog or cat before they came to school, and then sitting next to them at school or sitting close to them in school, I would get sick. Like, I was so allergic, and I was allergic my whole life. And for as long as I can remember, you know, my brother wanted a dog. And I, of course, being allergic, it's like I loved animals, but I knew it was an impossibility, and I never had
the chance really to snuggle and cuddle and be close. And I always had to stay very far away from animals my whole life, which now that I say it out loud is so sad. Really so sad. Like I had a whole childhood void of animals, which is crazy, you know. And for as long as I can remember, my brother wanted a dog. He's all he's ever wanted. I can remember him, Leia's age, younger than Leia's age, asking for a dog, wanting a dog. And then because of me and my allergies, it's like it was never possible. It was just an impossibility, not going to happen. What is your favorite food? I think I can honestly say mine is bread. Now I'm craving my warm sourdough bread with some butter and salt on top. It's honestly the perfect thing to eat. But I'm also realistic, and I know for many of you out there, the carb feel might be real. It is too bad that carb-heavy foods are often the ones we love the most. That's why Hero Bread makes those same delicious favorites free of consequences or compromises. They have remade carby empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious versions that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, plus protein and fiber. And let me tell you, their products taste amazing. The other day, Dennis and Leah and I were making some grilled cheese sandwiches, and that would be a perfect place to swap in Hero Bread. I am very mindful when it comes to what my daughter eats, and I love that this bread helps you get enough fiber and adds more protein to your diet while cutting down on the sugar. Hero Bread is not only delicious and flavorful, there's something for every craving, including sliced bread loaves, buns, and tortillas. So don't give up on being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use the code YOGAGIRL at checkout. That's YOGAGIRL at HERO.co. And I've been thinking about that so much. It's like his whole life he was waiting for Hammer. You know, he was waiting for this one dog, like kind of like he was waiting for his soulmate. You know, they were waiting for each other. And if he would have gotten a dog when he was, you know, old enough to walk a dog, we had a lot of conversations when we were teenagers, and when he turned like 12, 13, and he would beg, and could we find an allergy friendly one? And, you know, what about one of those dogs without fur? Even though it's not the fur that you're allergic to, but it just wasn't possible, right? But if he would have had a dog at that time, then he wouldn't have had Hammer, right? His whole life would be different. He maybe wouldn't have moved to the States. You know, as soon as he graduated high school, he moved to LA to go to music school and to play guitar. And that's where Hammer came into his life. And if he had a dog, then he probably wouldn't have moved. I don't think so. You know, or he would have already had his dog, you know, so it wouldn't have been Hammer, it would have been something else, which is so impossible to even think about. But our whole life, you know, there were no animals in our family because of me. And then when I turned 18, I moved and I fled and I ended up in Costa Rica and changed my life. And the first thing that happened, really one of the first things that happened when I started healing was that my allergies fell away. I had so many. I was one of those crazy kids that was allergic to everything. I mean, all the things you could eat, and fruits and vegetables and pollen and feathers and, of course, all animals. And it was just, I was always, it was like I was living, moving through a minefield, you know, traversing all the things that could give me an allergic reaction. And then moving to Costa Rica and I changed everything and those allergies, all of a sudden I could eat things I couldn't eat. All of a sudden I could have an apple and not have my whole mouth swell up, you know. I could eat tomato, raw tomato. I couldn't deal with raw tomato my whole life without like my lips getting really itchy and thick. Nuts I couldn't eat at all. You know, I couldn't even try. And then suddenly I could. And I remember one of those big light bulb moments I had was like, maybe I could get a dog. Like maybe I could have an animal now, you know? And so the first dog that came into my life was Keela, I think I've told this story on the pod. I'm not going to tell the whole story because it's long and this pod is not going to go there. But basically I saved / stole Keela and her little brother, two tiny puppies. They were like 4 weeks old, you know, barely eyes opened. And took them in, you know, and then I lost Keela's brother and I was left with Keela alone. I'll tell the story another time. Don't worry.
And my mom came to visit, and she was in Costa Rica with my sisters and Ludwig. Ludwig came. He spent like 3 or 4 months living in Dominical in this little town I lived in Costa Rica. And he got a little shack there, or he stayed in the shack where I used to live and was always like sleeping in a hammock there. And, you know, I was probably 19, he was probably 17. I was 19, 20 or something. And my mom found a dog in the mountains. She had rented a house in the mountains, and this dog showed up one day, this beautiful, beautiful dog, like really like a, he was just majestic looking. He just showed up one day, and he was just such a lover, and they fell head over heels. And it was like, I had moved out, you know, I was living in Costa Rica. It was, animals were up for grabs. And I think him, this dog, they named him Shanti. And Shanti was kind of the initiation, right, for my family to like, wait, like we can have a dog? Like how would a dog fit into our lives? And I got Keela. And we have these beautiful photos of like Keela as a, you know, half a pound puppy, like tiny puppy sleeping on Shanti's neck. It's so beautiful. It was really so beautiful. And then right at the end of that trip, as they were arranging how to bring Shanti home and, you know, getting all the papers in order and the vet stamps and everything to bring Shanti to Sweden, he died. It was really, really, really sad. I mean, really sad. He, one day when my mom and my siblings, they were going to the beach, and they was kind of on a mountain road, and that like they would do every day, he had followed them all the way down from the top of the mountain, all the way, and he ran after the car on the highway. And of course, they didn't know, they didn't see, and he got hit by a car and he died. And I remember this so intensely. It was really, really brutal. It was, it was really brutal. I haven't thought about this in a long time. And I remember my mom and my siblings and everyone was just losing it. You know, losing it so. And they had him for such a short time. It was like 2 months or a month and a half they had him. And it was just such a heartbreak. And we didn't know what to do. And I called my friends who had a dive shop in the street where we were. And I was like, I need help. We need to pick up this dog, and we need to bury him. I need help. And I remember we pulled out onto the highway and found him, because someone had said that they had seen his collar, like he was lost for a little bit. They didn't know where he was, and someone had seen that collar. And then it was pouring rain, middle of the night, and I remember driving with my friend Mike and Rich and he stops the car and looks at me and goes, "You stay in the car, like don't get out and they picked him up, and I think it was really bad. And we drove up to the house and buried him there, you know, and had a little ceremony for him there. And it was so sad and so heartbreaking. But in a way, it was kind of like he was the initiation for all the dogs in our family. Without him, you know, without him and Keela, because they really entered at the same time, there wouldn't have been everybody else somehow. And so when they left Costa Rica, they immediately, as soon as they came home, got a dog. And that's Henry. And Henry now lives with my other brother. And he's also getting old, right? This was 13 years ago. So Henry's 13. And then right after that, my brother graduated and he moved to LA. And really strangely, like how he came across Hammer, it was really... like it was a friend, I think, or an acquaintance that had a dog. It was a year old. He was from the Midwest. Like he wasn't even from LA. It was a dog that he had gotten, I think, at a shelter somewhere else. And couldn't keep him. And my brother just like, he just knew, like this is my dog. This is my person. That was Hammer, you know. And so basically his whole adult life, he's 31 now, Hammer's 13, his whole adult life, it's been him and Hammer. It's been the two of them against the world. It hasn't been like, you know, sometimes like with Ringo, for example, our little one, I kind of get this feeling sometimes like he's our little baby and Dennis and I were like his parents, you know, because he's really childlike, puppy-like. Like he's, I don't think Ringo is a super old soul. You know what I mean? I mean, he's not a young soul either, but he's not ancient, right? He really does feel like our little baby. But with Hammer and Ludwig, they were more like equals somehow. You know, it was more like, it was just his person, like it was them together. And then everywhere, for as long as I can recall, yeah, for the past like 12 years, whenever you've met Ludwig, you've met Hammer. Like Hammer is always there. He comes to work with him every day, all day. They don't separate. They don't have a reason to separate. Like wherever Ludwig goes, Hammer goes. Wherever Hammer goes, Ludwig goes. And I can't, just visualizing, like envisioning, seeing him and not him not taking a moment to like open the back, you know, to get Hammer out of the car. It's like you see Ludwig walking down the street or coming out of the car to greet you or walking into the house. Like it's them, right? It's not just him. It's almost like, yeah, it's like they're attached, you know. Even in my brain now, I'm trying to visualize it. Like what is it going to be like to see him just, you know, is he just going to get out of his car alone? Like doesn't compute, you know? So anyway, so I got Keela and then my mom got Henry and then Ludwig got Hammer and then I met Dennis, right? And Dennis already had Laika. He had gotten her kind of similarly, like she was also a year when we met and he'd gotten her at the shelter. And together we got Pepper. We found him in a trash can the side of the road because this is what people do. Sometimes they have animals who get unwanted puppies and they throw them away. And he was just this tiny, tiny, tiny little, oh my God, he was so dirty. He smelled so bad. He was so little. His belly was so swollen. It was like his head was too big for his whole body. Like he was just so, oh, he was so cute. It was crazy. And I just knew like this, there's no way I'm going to bring this dog to the shelter. You know, like this is our dog. And yeah. And then we got Ringo a couple of years later, you know, so Ringo really was the baby. And for a long time, wherever it was so easy to have Ringo in the beginning, you know, that first year, because he was a puppy. So he was, of course, a little bit crazy, like how all puppies are. But it was Ringo and Pepper together, always. You know, Pepper was a big black lab looking dog. He was a big boy dog, you know, the kind of dog, like similar to Hammer, like the kind of dog that loves to swim. We've seen him, like taking him to the beach in Aruba, and he just like sees someone on a paddleboard way out in the distance and just goes for it, right? Like we have seen him. Oh my God, we were such irresponsible dog owners. But just Pepper like spotting something in the distance and he's like, okay, bye. And he just swims. He would swim and swim and swim. And we're like yelling at him, come back, come back. And it's like a stranger on a paddleboard way out. We have seen him knock people off their paddleboards to get up on the paddleboard because he loved the paddleboard so much. That's always like a fun apology to make. Luckily, the person he did that to was like a huge dog lover, so it was okay. But he was just like a stick carrying, you know, loved to play fetch, like just a little bit clumsy, you know, just like a big doofus. Like that's kind of how Pepper was. I miss him so much. Like even just talking about him, I miss him. And he would howl if he heard a high-pitched noise, like an ambulance or even just a high pitch. You could make a high-pitched noise next to him and he would sing. You know, he would sing. And in the beginning, you know, it was Ringo and Pepper. Like wherever Pepper went, Ringo was there. Ringo was by his feet. So even though Ringo was a puppy and he didn't listen so well, we never had to worry because all we had to do was call Pepper and Ringo would be there with Pepper. And Pepper listened. He was the best listener we ever had of all of our dogs. We've never been one of those, you know, people who are like super great at training our dogs. Or like I would love to be one of those people who can walk down a busy street in the city with a dog at your feet without a leash. That is not us, okay? Definitely not us. Like we have lived kind of chaotic lives. Like our dogs are always like living outside and inside and always go for walks without leashes because we've been, you know, on the north shore of Aruba where there's nobody else, or in our little street, like a dead-end street where we lived with no other houses or anything. So we never really had to, you know, do those like specific diligent disciplines training, and we're not good at that. But with Pepper, it's like you never had to. You know, he was always there. He would never run away. He would never stray far. He would always stay close. And if he ever, like, you know, aside from that, like, aside from when he was in the water, like, that was hard. Once he was in the water, it was hard to get him out. Like, he loved the water. But for walks and stuff, all you had to do was call him. And he would come right at your feet, and Ringo would be there, you know. So when Pepper died, that was really the beginning of Ringo, like, running away. And I'm wondering, like, if he started doing that, maybe he was looking for Pepper in the beginning, and that's why he ran away. We had so many, and I was so scared that something was going to happen to him, because I was so scared of death after that year where everybody died. Ringo never went off leash again. Poor baby. Yeah, he really didn't. Now he's off leash on our land. And that's the first time, really, since before Pepper died, that Ringo has been off leash. He's never off leash, because that little bastard, he just, like, he would do that. Like, after Pepper died, he would just take off, and he would kind of turn around looking at us, knowing that he's not supposed to run, right? Knowing that he's doing something bad, and he would just run. You know, we have so many crazy stories of hunting Ringo down off the side of a mountain in Costa Rica. And, you know, he was just like, he's a sight hound. He's an Italian greyhound, and they love to chase things, right? So you see a squirrel or a bird, and, like, boom, he would just go. But with Pepper, that was never the case. Did you know that women were excluded from clinical research policy by federal law until 1993? Women belong in scientific research. They are essential. But not only that, how can we trust any of the data when it comes to our bodies if nothing used to exist? Ritual took this gap and conducted a university-led human clinical trial for their Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin to assess its efficacy. The results, it increased vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in just 12 weeks. That's some data we can trust. Ritual is a clinically backed multivitamin for women 18 plus with high quality and traceable key ingredients in clean, bioavailable forms. It is USP verified, meaning you can trust what you're putting in your body and know that it actually works. And only about 1% of supplement brands on the market have the USP verified mark. Not only does Ritual take your health seriously, they are also invested in the health of the planet. Ritual is a female-founded B Corp. They use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. I have been through the ringer when it comes to vitamins, and that's why I love Ritual, because I can actually trust that it does what it's supposed to do, and it comes from a company that actually cares. No more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/yogagirl. Start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/yogagirl for 25% off.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
But so anyway, and then now we have all these dogs. Right. So if I count, it's Keela, Laika, Ringo, and we had Pepper. My brother had Hammer. My mom had Henry. So this was like all the family dogs. We were all very close together. And then my sister, she got two dogs on her mom's side. My half sister, Emily, has two dogs there. And then my other sister, who just visited us a couple weeks ago, she's the opera singing sister. If you're ever trying to keep track of my family, I think you can give up. It's impossible. Like, my family is totally crazy and all over the place. One day I'm going to make like a little family tree just to like paint a picture so it makes sense. But there's nine siblings. There's nine of us, and there's a lot of halves. The only ones that are with the same mom and dad is me and Ludwig, me and my brother, out of us grown-ups. But so my other sister, the opera singing one, she strangely spent her whole entire life deathly terrified of dogs. So can you imagine with all these dogs around? And she's so scared of dogs. She's been scared of dogs her whole life. I can't remember. She had a scary thing happen when she was little with a scary incident with an off-leash dog. And she just was completely traumatized by that and so scared of dogs. And then all of a sudden, like a year and a half ago or something, she just gets over this fear and now she has a dog. And it's so crazy because she was just here. And, you know, we know when your family, when you're dog people, and then you meet someone who isn't like a dog person, they haven't been around dogs for years and years and years. You know, you kind of lack that feeling around animals. And she still has that. Like she has a dog that she loves, but she's still a little awkward around dogs. She doesn't really know how, you know, certain things. And I caught myself with her all the time. Like, you know, just, no, you gotta like shorten the leash. And then like the dogs are like going all over the place and leashes are getting tangled. And I'm like, no, no, no. Like when you're out walking four dogs, you gotta keep to your space. You know, like stuff that's like natural to everyone who's had a bunch of dogs isn't natural to her. But she's so in love with her dog. Her name's Cheetah and she's a rescue and she's so beautiful. And it's like her whole life now. And she's like, all of a sudden, she's also a dog person. And then in the middle of all of this, out of the blue, my dad goes and gets a dog. And it's like, so literally there's not one. Oh yeah. And then I forgot about one. Some of you who follow me on social media, you might remember Sam. I don't know if that rings a bell for anybody, but he was a crazy, like actually legitimately kind of crazy stray, a dog that lived in our street, that every time we walked in Aruba, we would take the dogs out on the road, he would join us and he would come running like happily, so excited to go for a walk with us, even though he wasn't our dog. Some lady down the road was feeding him, but he wasn't really, no one had claimed him. There's a lot of dogs like that in Aruba. And when it comes to adult dogs, we don't, through our animal rescue organization that we have in Aruba called Sergeant Pepper's Friends, named after Pepper, we don't take in adults because they are near impossible to domesticate. They are near impossible to rehome. You know, rehoming an adult dog, they often have, you know, they can have a lot of aggression that's really difficult to manage and to deal with. They are almost never appropriate for families and for kids, you know, but puppies and little ones, you can still shape them. But a dog that has been living in the streets for years, you know, it's a different kind of animal. You know, it's an animal. It's not a pet. It's an animal. And Sam is an animal. Okay. He's an animal. And he was just this crazy dog living in our street. And we, one day, yeah, these also wildly crazy neighbors that we had started poisoning dogs in the area. And we saved two that were poisoned. And then we got really scared that Sam, because we knew him, because he was just walking with us every day. You know, we would feed him from time to time, that he was going to get poisoned. So we took him in. And then my sister came to visit, my sister Maya, and she fell in love with this dog. And he slept every night in her bed. And I remember going like, like I could, maybe we get Sam to Sweden, you know, knowing like he's never going to find like a solid home in Aruba or anywhere. And she brought him home, you know? And now it's like, you can't imagine Maya without Sam. Like everyone in the family, sorry, this became like a long-winded explanation of all of our family dogs, but everyone has a dog. And I'm thinking, you know, sitting here, like, what would life be like without these dogs? How flat and dull and lifeless. I mean, we would find, of course, there would be life, there would be joy from other things, but the amount of life and fullness and just that plain happiness that a dog brings, it really is out of this world. It's like, it's not comparable to anything else. Because no matter where we go, no matter what's going on in our lives, like there they are. No matter what kind of day you've had, you open the door to your house and there they are. And they are so happy to see you. So happy to see you. And it's this level of just unconditional love that is really hard to get in any other place. And there's also a simplicity to that love. You know, I think that's what makes it so special, that the love between people, of course, it can be huge and massive and big and unconditional and beautiful, but it's always a little bit complex, right? Because it comes with personalities of human beings. It comes with resentment, and it comes with fear, and it comes with, you know, worries and insecurities and human being stuff. Like, we are complicated as people. Dogs are not complicated, you know. Dogs just love. And somehow through them just loving, we get to also just love in this very straightforward, uncomplicated way. You know, we don't have to dissect it or analyze it or make sense of it or figure stuff out. It's just that love is just there, and it's constant, and it's ever flowing, overflowing all the time. And I think part of, you know, losing a dog is just, it reaches another part of us, because it is that part that we're constantly looking for inside of ourselves. You know, we want to love like we love our dogs. We want to love like how we are loved by our dogs. We want to dwell and be in that kind of unconditional, uncomplicated, just obvious, beautiful place. It's the most beautiful way to relate. I mean, it really, really, really is. And I also, I feel so grateful for them. And I'm feeling a lot of grief. But underneath it all, I just feel so much gratitude. Because what's so wild, you know, and of course it's true what they say, it's we grieve at the level that we loved, right? And that is why losing a dog and grieving a dog, it hurts so much, because we loved them so much and they loved us so much, and the level of love was just infinite, right? So the grief also becomes just so deep and so heavy, and also so straight to the point. You know, it's not a complicated grief, it's just raw, it just hurts all the time. And I find it almost, it's almost wild to me that 8 years later, and I can just open this little door in my heart where this pain lives for losing Pepper, and it's just there, you know. I can cry about it in an instant. Like, I miss him all the time. And it's been 8 years. You know, there's no such thing as it's just a dog. You know, a dog is everything. A dog is life. My brother, he used to call Hammer, he used to call him livet, which is a beautiful Swedish word, and it means life. Du livet. So you're just life. And I really think he loved him like life. You know, his presence was so big, like he was life. And now to somehow move on from that, you know, to somehow live without that. And of course, it's like they live on in our hearts, and a part of them will always be with us. But that's also not true, right? Because there is loss. And all of a sudden, you walk home and you open the door and you step into an empty house, you know? How do you move on from that? Like, it's really, really, really heavy. And in the last days, just when Hammer started getting worse, and then it happened really quickly in the very end, just the last few days. It was very quick. And it was very beautiful in a way, because it was so obvious. And this is for me what I felt was very healing, to just to get to witness, compared to how Pepper died. Pepper died. He got very sick, seemingly overnight. And we didn't even know he was sick. He was running and swimming and being his normal self, you know, so healthy, looking so happy, so normal, to finding out he's severely ill. And then 4 days later, he died. There was no, and even though we knew he was sick, there was not a bone in my body that thought he would die. The day before he died, we had planned a blood transfusion the next day to help get his blood count up. And I went to bed that night, like, you know, I was worried about him, but I did not think he was going to die. No way. And the sound, like I woke up in the morning from the sound of him gasping for air. That's like, I woke up from that sound, like him trying to breathe. No, he didn't have any more. He couldn't breathe. And how shocked, like the shock that came with that death, how unprepared I was, how completely out of the blue, you know, it was really, really out of the blue and very, very violent. Just the whole passing was very violent, very traumatic, very, so overwhelming. And to compare that with now, you know, with knowing Hammer was going to die, getting to somehow really cherish those days, being there, seeing it planned and prepared and grounded and calm, and also seeing how he was so ready. He was so ready. He was really so, so, so ready. It was that feeling that I had with Pepper, that it was too soon, it was too early, he had a whole life to live. There was none of that with Hammer, because he lived a complete life, a full and complete life. And although it was really, you know, being there for his passing and holding my brother through his passing, it goes down for me in the history of just the most painful, one of the most painful and beautiful days of my whole entire life. It's up there. It definitely is one of the most painful, hardest things I've ever experienced. But at the same time, it was also so very healing, you know, because it was painful and it was heartbreaking, and it's so sad that he's gone. But it was always filled with so much joy. Like even on that last day, just we took a long walk with the dogs and there was so much joy. And I took a billion photos, you know, how you take photos of someone you love who's losing the person they love the most, or the one they love the most. I took 1,000 photos of my brother and he's smiling in every single one. He really is, you know. And I was looking through those pictures of that last walk, all the dogs walking through the woods, walking to the lake, throwing sticks, you know, the last stick, all of that, like knowing, like these are his last hours. Every single photo, he's smiling, you know. And that's how I want to remember Hammer, and that's how I want to hold them, just in memory of them together, is just with so much joy. And it's wild. It's really wild, you know, like how, and I look at it now, like after he passed and that whole long, you know, very, very hard afternoon. And I see the ripple effect of all the people that are so touched and moved by Hammer. You know, how he completely just blew my brother's heart open. My brother's so soft. He's so himself. He's so... It's very special just to be near him right now. It's just very special. And I look at our parents, you know, our mom and our dad, and how they are so very vulnerable, and it's intimate and it's soft and it's gentle. And then all of our siblings, you know, all of us sitting here with our dogs at home, and Hammer's the first one to pass, you know, how everyone is just loving each other. And there's none of that. It's almost like that simplicity and uncomplicated love that you share with a dog. It's like that love has spilled over into all of our human relationships right now. And yeah, underneath there's layers of complexity and challenges and people stuff, right? But right now, none of that really matters, you know, because of Hammer. And it's like his love is just like he left this earthly place, and then all of that love has just spilled over onto everybody else, and everyone is just loving right now in a really powerful way. And even the vet who was there for the final moments, he cried. Like, everybody who, I know some of you listening now, like, you are shedding a tear for Hammer and for Ludwig, and it's so special to me that a dog did this. You know, a dog did this. A dog changed this whole world. Like, a dog has changed a whole life. A dog has changed our whole family. A dog is, you can never say it's just a dog. No such thing as just a dog. When a dog is actually life. Livet, you know. And I like to believe that, you know, Pepper and Hammer are chasing sticks somewhere now. My sister had a birthday this weekend, and a lot of our family, it was the last time they got to see Hammer and they got to say goodbye. And it was time to leave. My grandfather was leaving, and he's getting a little older. You know, he's getting older. He's a little scatterbrained, and so you have to speak up when you speak to him now. And he was leaving, and he was like, okay, bye everybody, you know. And then we were like, but hey, Farfar, like, you gotta say bye to Hammer, you know. This is the last time you see him. And he just stopped in his tracks, and he bent down. You know, he's 78 years old, and he bent down and he whispered, "Vi ses vid nästa sjö." And I can't say those words without something bursting in my heart. It means, I'll see you at the next lake. And I really feel the truth of that the next lake, right? The next life, like, wherever that is, we'll see him at the next lake. And at the end of our lives, we'll get to throw sticks with every dog we've ever loved. And I feel so grateful that at the end of my life, there's going to be so many dogs there. There's going to be so many dogs waiting for me. And it's really heartbreaking to think of all the loss that is going to have to involve. But it also means that all the love I got to feel in a whole lifetime, like, that depth of love, you know, at the end of my life, there's going to be so many dogs waiting for me at the next lake. And there's such gratitude in knowing that. And I think this is the end of my share today. I feel like I did good. I feel like I was in a mess the whole time. But if I could ask one thing of you, it would mean so much. Just, I don't know if you pray or if you meditate, or if you could just send a loving, warm thought or a loving, warm prayer, just a little loving energy my brother's way, that would really mean so much. And all of our way, I think. And I'll be back next week. Until then, squeeze all of your fur babies, all of them, really tight. I know you are, all the time. But just really cherish them, yeah. Thanks for listening. I'll see you next Friday.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you listen, rate, review, and follow all episodes of the Yoga Girl podcast, Conversations from the Heart. This was a presentation of Cadence 13 Studio, and I'll see you next week.